Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Vijay Vaitaswaran. He is the energy and green innovation editor at The Economist magazine and my guide on energy as we approach COP26 in Glasgow, Scotland, a gathering of eagles and doves. Before the meeting, however, from Luxembourg, we have this report. European Union Green Policy Chief Frans Timmermans meeting China's top climate envoy face-to-face for the first time ahead of the COP26 summit. A pledge from China to reduce emissions faster this decade is seen as crucial for the world to have a realistic shot at meeting the Paris Agreement target to cap warming at 1.5 degrees. Xi Jinping, the General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, is not expected to attend. Neither is Vladimir Putin, the President of the Russian Federation. However, there will be many world leaders there, and looking to this and the EU's expectations. Vijay, I speak generally because of my learning from The Economist magazine. The EU is well advanced in its green thinking in comparison to the United States, to China and India. Is that correct? Good evening to you, Vijay.
Good evening, John. Good to be with you. You're quite right that Europe has got the most advanced policies on climate change in the world, by and large. Things like carbon taxes, things like mandates, regulations, as well as massive subsidies and a roadmap for 2030, for 2050 on where they want to go with things like green hydrogen, which is one of the tools of decarbonization. So they put a lot more thought, a lot more money, and a lot more ambition into it. However, Europe cannot do everything by itself. In fact, Europe is a relatively small corner of the world and an increasingly diminishing share of the world's greenhouse gases. China, India, those are the big places where we need to see action on things like coal. The United States, you rightly mentioned, we're not doing enough, and we need to do more. And countries like Australia, a relatively small, rich country, exports a massive amount of coal that actually is a significant part of the problem and is not very serious about acting on climate change, even though Australians are quite vulnerable to its effects, like wildfires, like droughts. So I think there's a lot of work to be done, and Europe is simply hoping to lead. But if nobody else follows, the problem is still there.
Europe is a mixed picture, if I say correctly. France, for example, generates a great deal of electricity with nuclear energy. Germany, not so much. I believe they discontinued or will discontinue their nuclear energy program. Let's focus on energy because, I mean, nuclear energy because the UK is putting out news now that it is building a new nuclear energy facility. What is the general opinion at COP26 anticipating this? Is nuclear energy green innovation? Is it part of the solution? What does Europe believe, Vijay?
So there is the view of the people gathering at COP, and in particular Europe, that nuclear energy is the skunk at the garden party. You know, the darlings are the renewables, the devils are the fossil fuels. And then these interlopers, the nuclear people, they turn up and they are almost zero carbon. They're very low carbon. So The Economist, for example, has argued for many years that nuclear should be on the table. In fact, most people who look at energy systems, when you think out to 2050 or the second half of the century, it is impossible to envision a truly decarbonized energy system without some significant role for renewables. We can't get there without a new generation of renewal of nuclear power getting there, being part of the solution. But it is not popular. And part of the problem is environmentalists in Germany who are very anti-nuclear. But part of the problem, too, is that it's very expensive. The current technology for nuclear is very, very expensive and not getting cheaper, whereas new solar, new wind, the prices are falling very rapidly. We hope within a decade that technologies that people like Bill Gates are investing in, what are called modular reactors that are small, nimble, inherently safe nuclear power plants, that they will emerge and that could transform nuclear. Until it does, I predict that nuclear will continue to be in a bit of a stasis.
Also, part of the conversation at COP26 all the time now, it's in The Economist magazine, we talk about it all the time, is that here, irony being what it is, Europe is without adequate energy supplies for this winter. Right now, it's colder, and it will increasingly be obvious that Europe did not plan ahead. Part of the solution might be Russia. Russia is energy superpower, and yet, because of politics right now, it's not clear that Russia will meet the demand, despite even with the price increase. Europe is Europe going to solve this as part of the conversation of transition from fossil fuel based energy to green innovation? Is Europe prepared? Is Europe in a place to solve this, leaving this gap that could go on for many years and certainly will discourage people from supporting green innovation?
John, you asked the right question. This very week, European ministers have been having an emergency meeting to deal with the energy crisis. And given that it's Europe, of course, they can't agree. They're squabbling. Spain wants one thing. France wants something else. The more free market economies like Netherlands, they don't want any intervention in the marketplace. Everyone's afraid of Russia and pointing fingers at Gazprom, the gas exporter, for playing politics with the gas. That's what they believe. But they're also pointing fingers at China for buying up all of the LNG or liquefied natural gas that they in Europe think should be only coming to Europe at a very low price, even though it's meant to be an international market for LNG. So Europe is trying to figure out how to get out of its mess, and it is a mess at the moment. The short answer is there is going to be a winter crunch. The gas stocks are very low. Russia is playing a bit of politics, and China is certainly bidding up prices for that gas. But the problems have been created fundamentally by European policy. It's wrong to blame Russia or China for mistakes that Europe has made. And the main mistake is excessive reliance on natural gas imports, which, of course, are being bid up by around the world. Other people want them too. And a big bet on renewables without thinking through the fact that renewables can be intermittent. Sometimes the wind doesn't blow. The hydroelectric dams, they don't fill up when the rains don't come. And so Europe has been caught in a bind. They don't have enough energy stored up, for example, because batteries aren't good enough. So the politics of transition, energy market design, gas market design, were not thought through well enough in Europe. And that's a salutary lesson for the United States and other countries as well to think about.
Also, transition is market solutions. And this, in these last hours from Reuters and other reporting, Dan Loeb disclosed a position in Shell and called for the oil major to be broken up. Billionaire investor Dan Loeb revealed a stake in Royal Dutch Shell, trumpeted his bets on Upstart and Rivian, and warned stocks could come under pressure in 2022 in his third quarter letter. What he wants is to break up an energy giant. Is this transition? We started talking about Exxon under pressure many weeks ago. Are all the oil giants paying attention now, Vijay?
So here's what's really going on. I read Dan Loeb's letter. This is a hedge fund called Third Point. They're known to be activists. They've intervened in a number of other companies, including Disney and others. It's cloaked in the language of environmentalism, of ESG investing, of creating value by decarbonizing. But really, what he wants is he wants to get more shareholder return. He's a financial activist, not a green activist. And what he's really saying is by keeping the oily bits of Shell, which are very much out of favor with investors, lumped together with the greener bits of Shell, meaning the renewables and the natural gas business, because natural gas is less carbon intensive, you are lowering the potential value of the company by breaking it up. In particular, if the gas division would be a gas super major all by itself, the world's biggest gas company, and natural gas, if you do it right, is a low carbon bridge to the renewables future, they would be able to get much greater value for shareholders from allowing the gas and the renewables division to be floated separately. That's the argument. It's not an environmental argument really at all. In fact, if the oil assets, for example, were to be sold to Chevron or to the Nigerian National Oil Company, the world still produces just as much oil. There's no benefit to the climate by breaking up Shell and having those assets run by a different oil company. So this is really just about financial returns. And that's okay, but let's be clear what it is. It's not an environmental activist. And secondly, it ain't going to happen. Shell is too rich and too successful. There's not enough financial pressure that even a big hedge fund like his can bring. The share he's taken, $750 million stake in Shell, it's tiny, less than 0.5% of Shell, because it's such a Goliath of a company. So I think Shell is going to keep chugging along like a supertanker.
We have a minute, Vijay. What are your expectations? What should we watch for in the early days of COP26 in Glasgow? A minute.
Deflate all of your expectations almost down to zero, and you won't be disappointed. And then look for small victories once your expectations are very low. Bear in mind, COP meetings like this only occasionally produce big breakthroughs, like the one in Paris 6 years ago. This is not that kind of a meeting. What you really need to watch for are how are individual countries giving concrete details on what they're going to do in the next 10 years, the so-called national commitments. That's the devil in the details. And so far, countries like Saudi Arabia, China, Australia have provided very deeply disappointing results. And the U.S., we'll see with the deal in Congress. Maybe we'll do a little bit better. It remains to be seen.
Vijay Vaitheeswaran is the energy and green innovation editor of The Economist magazine. Looking to COP26, I'm lowering my expectations at Vijay's recommendation. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.